Let's have an AA meeting. My name is Misty and I'm an alcoholic. Hi. Welcome to the Monday night Blue Chip Speakers meeting at the NABA Club, where a member of Alcoholics Anonymous with 1 year or more of sobriety tells his or her story. This reading is based on a passage from 29 of the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous. Each individual, in our personal stories, describes in their own language and from their own point of view the way they establish their relationship with God. These give a fair cross-section of our membership and a clear-cut idea of what has happened in their lives. We hope no one will consider these self-revealing accounts in bad taste. Our hope is that many alcoholic men and women in our room tonight and listening later on the AABlueChipSpeakers.org, desperately in need, will hear our speaker. And we believe that it is only by fully disclosing ourselves and our problem that any of us shall be persuaded to say, yes, I am one of them too. I must have this thing. Now to introduce tonight's speaker, wonderful man, and his name is Eric W.
Hey everyone, my name is Eric Wieland and I am an alcoholic.
Hi Eric.
I have a home group which I report to or go to and enjoy being around. It's called a Fifth Tradition group. I have a sponsor that I talk to and I sponsor other guys. And those three things help me stay in the middle of the bed. And I'm also one who's also tried to go on the outskirts of Alcoholics Anonymous and not do those things, and my life quickly begins to become unmanageable. I first walked into Alcoholics Anonymous in 1992 in the room over there, and got very involved, found out that AA happens all day long. You can go to meetings in the morning, you can go to meetings in the afternoon, in the evening. And I just found that at that point in my life, that's what I did. Morning, evening, kept me centered. Got a sponsor in that little, in a 9 o'clock group over there. Came to this room frequently. And then my life got a little bit better. And I decided that I needed to go on and get involved in my life. And the long and short of it is that I decided to go to culinary school and started going to meetings out of town, but they were different, and picked up this little drug we like to call marijuana, thinking that it's not alcohol, that it'll be okay. And what happened was I immediately lost my spiritual connection that I gained in 16 months of being sober. I felt it. And I spent the next 10 years playing around. I'm a very fortunate guy that I didn't get thirsty and start drinking. And then somebody else pointed to me, because I use that as an excuse. At least I'm not drinking, right? At least I'm not drinking. And I use that, and somebody pointed out to me, and I really didn't like it when he said, well, maybe if you'd started drinking, you would have gotten sober again. That really was irritating. But it's true. It's fact, right? Maybe I would have got... Or maybe I would have died. Who knows? Don't know. So I returned back into the program in 2003, and I've stayed here ever since. So how did I get here? Well, I was fortunate to be the oldest child of a fairly successful doctor of psychiatry. He actually specialized in drug and alcohol abuse treatments. He is a medical director at Ridgeview and medical director of Peachtree Parkwood, and he didn't see that his son had alcoholism. I like to say that before I got here, that I used to blame the circumstances of my life on why I like to drink so much. And unfortunately, or fortunately, the longer I've been here, I can see what bullshit that excuse was. I happen to be just a regular garden variety alcoholic who has the situation that when I put alcohol in my body, I cannot tell you what's going to happen. I may have 2. I may have 22. I may end up on a train in another city.
I may end up next to a woman I don't know. I may lose my car. But that first drink, y'all,
does not tell me that stuff's going to happen. Right?
I didn't learn that until I walked into Alcoholics Anonymous. I was convinced it was the 14th, 15th, 16th drink that was causing all my life problems. But I learned it was the first one. That I am different from my sisters and my parents and some of my good friends. That I have this little allergy, talk about in the doctor's opinion, that makes me a little bit different. And it sets up this craving for another drink. And if I'm not drinking, I have this little mental twist that says, you know what? You deserve to have a drink. You've worked hard today. She was a real bitch. the cop treated you wrong.
Wife's treating you wrong. It's 3:30 in the afternoon. You should go pick up some beer.
And I proceeded to do that and drove my wife into the ground compared to my peers, and didn't understand why I wasn't getting anywhere quickly. So my parents made a decision
to move to Georgia when I was 6.
And that's my first resentment. I loved where we were living in Philadelphia when I was 6.
I was in this big house. We could ride the big wheels in the basement. There was land. There was an orchard. There was a creek. It was a great place for a 6-year-old boy
who liked to go out of the house and wander around. So we got down here. I rebelled as a 6-year-old in 2nd grade. Started going to a public school. And
met a neighbor who was a few years older than I was. And my rebellion was smoking cigarettes. And my dad did it, so I could do it.
And I was, you know, in 2nd grade.
My parents had an opportunity to purchase a home.
And they
took me into a new school district.
And all of a sudden, I was the new kid again. And this is a theme
that comes up in my life.
I don't like being the new guy. I'm uncomfortable.
Right? When this room started filling up, I was like, oh shit, can I get out of here?
Right? Because I'm uncomfortable around people I don't know. It's become very evident that I am the chameleon and I'll adjust my behavior to get you to like me.
And
that doesn't make me an alcoholic. It makes me a little bit
of a sick person or a not well person or just a human being who's afraid.
But it's a great thing to know about myself
so that I can learn how to behave real rather than behave in a way that I think you want me to be.
In 7th grade, my parents had the opportunity of
what they thought was going to be a great opportunity for me. Another theme in my story is that I tend to squander the opportunities other people have presented to me.
So they put me in a private school. And I wasn't happy about that at all.
And I had the new face in a private school, and these kids seemed to all know each other. And, of course, I was the new guy.
And I was unhappy.
Right.
Met a couple of people
who befriended me. Had a little experience. I come from a family of what I would say hard drinkers. We thought some of them were alcoholic early on, but I'm in my 50s now, as my cousins have grown up,
they haven't displayed alcoholism. They still can drink a good amount, but they've
had successful lives, and it hasn't interfered in their life the way alcohol interfered with mine. So alcohol was always around. Right? I'm accustomed to my father, who would have 4 or 6 drinks a day. So I thought that was normal. Right? Beer when you get home from work, glass of wine at dinner,
and a heavier drink
to close the evening out.
So I had a few family experiences where alcohol was served to me at 13 years old,
Thanksgivings or Christmases,
and I liked it. and I would try to get as much as I possibly could. And there was a couple stories of me being fairly intoxicated at these family gatherings. We moved to 7th and 8th grade, junior high, and my desire to get alcohol as frequently as I can in the early 80s, was on, right? Trying to steal alcohol from the parents' supply cabinet, not get caught. Friends of us would maybe bring our little airplane bottles, the little gatherings that we had. And I showed no fear. Like, I would drink on school campus, at school dances. The first repercussion of that was in 9th grade, where I got really intoxicated before a school dance. And it was obvious. I really overshot the mark. And basically was passed out drunk listening to Van Halen band, jam band, in the cafeteria at the school. And when that happens, there are people who are watching. See, that's another thing I forget as an alcoholic, that other people are actually watching my behavior. Right? I just think I'm kind of oblivious going through the world, but no, other people are watching. So the principals are watching, and the administrators are watching, and I ended up being pulled out and getting very, very sick in the principal's personal bathroom. And so what came out of that, though, was some negative consequences. I got suspended. I got intimidated, so I kind of ratted out my friends. But I also got a reputation in the high school as this wild, crazy guy. And I liked that. It kind of fit. It kind of took away the fear. And I kind of used that for the rest of my drinking career as kind of the wild, crazy guy. I was always kind of smaller for my... I was always smaller, and so I could always... I could drink a lot, but it affected me a lot, too. So high school came around. I was an okay student. I was a decent athlete. And I liked to party on the weekends. And that's what I would do as much as possible. And I could get through it at that point in time. Senior year, the alcohol and the marijuana, which is all I was doing at that point in time, began to take an effect on my attitude, right? Because that's something we don't really get to see, but we begin to maybe stop doing the things that we like to do so that we could party a little bit more. You know, training for athletics interferes with some afternoon drinking, right? So I kind of allowed the alcohol and the drugs to affect what was a pretty good wrestling career for me. I ended up having the opportunity to go to college. That's what my parents' goal was for me to do. It wasn't quite my goal, but everybody around me was doing it, so it's time to go to college. And I got accepted to a school about as far away from Atlanta as I possibly could be. Right? And I visited this school. The fraternities were in high gear, and it looked like a great party school. And I said, yes, I'll go to this school. I didn't really have any reasons to go to school except for to get out of Atlanta, to get away from my parents, and to live maybe a country club lifestyle for a while. That ended up kind of what I did. I joined a fraternity. I was drinking Monday, Wednesday, Saturday, Friday, Saturday. And, of course, a guy like me could be talked into Tuesday, Thursday, and Sunday. So, I mean, I could drink 7 days a week. Got into that habit of waking up in the morning and smoking weed, and was introduced to cocaine, hallucinogenics, a band called The Grateful Dead, and I was there, right? I had found my sweet spot, and you should turn off your cell phone. That's why the fifth time it's gone off today. Show some respect to Alcoholics Anonymous. And that's what I did, y'all. I had this great opportunity to go to college, get some brains, get an opportunity outside of that, and I spent the whole time partying. I had to drop out of the fraternity to convince my parents I was going to be serious about my grades. That didn't work. I graduated just barely because I had to go to summer school to get a diploma. I failed a course my last semester, senior year, because I just didn't go. It's too early in the morning.
9 o'clock is too early for a guy like me. 10:30, 11 o'clock class is better for a guy like me. The evening seminars weren't good for a guy like me because I was stoned by the time, 5 o'clock rolled around. So, graduated, came back to Atlanta. My peers had all gotten jobs. For some reason, I didn't quite know how to do that. Maybe I didn't go to the Career Center. Maybe I thought it was just supposed to be given to me. But I was kind of oblivious about that thing, about how to get a job. And of course, I had this idea that I needed a white-collar job, but I didn't know how to do that. So, and I didn't have the grades for it. And so I came back to Atlanta and lived at mom's and dad's and did some, low-skill labor and catering and doing some, more skilled labor and painting and that kind of thing. And everybody in my life was moving to Washington, D.C. So I decided, well, I'll make some money at summer and move to Washington, D.C. I captured a girlfriend at the end of college, and so she was in D.C., I'm in D.C., my buddies are in D.C., the Grateful Dead come to D.C. twice a year, four times. And so it worked out really well. And I was given an opportunity through a family friend, and he worked on Capitol Hill. And I just didn't get it, y'all. When you're in Washington, D.C., if you're not going to work with the government or around the government agencies, then there's no reason really to go there because that's what it is. But my attitude was, I'm a little rebel without a cause, and I'm quite convinced that the government doesn't want me and I don't want it. I don't want to do military and I'm just this little wannabe hippie 60s kid. He's really just an alcoholic who doesn't get along well in the world and doesn't know it. And so this opportunity came up, and I interviewed my my parents' best friend from growing up. And he had worked around the world, and he said, well, what can I help you with? And on Capitol Hill, I was like, well, why the hell would I want to do that? And he's like, well, if you don't want to do that, you're in the wrong place. My friends were working on Capitol Hill. My friends were being interns and that type of stuff. And so what happened is I became a little paralegal at a law firm. And I got it stuck in my crawl that maybe I'll go into law school. So I just stuck in this job as basically a mailroom clerk with some access to go to the Library of Congress and to find documents and stuff like that. And that was fun. I didn't mind being a gopher. Got me out of the office, got me around town. Got me into really cool government buildings. I was good at finding information. And then it came time to take an LSAT, and I didn't score very well on that because it's hard to take an LSAT course when you're stoned and take a test when you're hungover, and I just didn't do well. So now what? People are beginning to leave D.C. I've been there for 2.5 years, and I don't know what to do in my life. And a friend of mine said, I'm working in Antarctica. I can get you a job down there. And I thought, that'll be cool. And cold, but it cool. But I got the job. We lied. I completely lied on the application. I said I knew how to drive heavy equipment, and I didn't. And I got down there, and they trained me how to drive heavy equipment, and it was a great job. And I'll tell you, at the South Pole, there are a lot of alcoholics because the Navy's down there. And what the Navy does is all the alcohol that's been around the world and that they have for their crews eventually falls out of date, and they ship it to Antarctica because they know it'll be drank. So I got there in 1991. Pop tops stopped existing in 1989, 88. And before I got there, they had just finished the pop top beers. So I was in a kind of dorm room with 20 guys, and 15 of them drank like I did. The beer machine was in the bathroom, and they gave you a case of beer or a quart of liquor as your ration. You had to buy it, but that was your ration for the week. And then they had four bars. And I tend to gravitate And I didn't drink with the officers, but I drank with the E9s and the listed men. And that's, I always kind of like to drink with those guys, right? I just like to, because I could drink as much as I could get drunk and didn't have to worry. But I forgot. And when you're in a small town, people are watching you, right? That's why, you know, in small towns, the drunks are always ending up in the drunk tank because the cops know who they are. They went to high school with them. And so my drinking and my escapades were noticed by management. And they were looking at ways to get rid of people due to the economics going on around 92. And I get belligerent. I don't know about you guys. I can get belligerent. And I can be willing to share my opinions of others. And some people might not like to hear what I think about them. And so there was a verbal altercation in long and short of it. We both got fired, which meant they had to take us to L.A. and drop us off. So we got back to L.A., hooked up with a girlfriend from D.C., who let me stay for a week, drove back to home, kind of in disgrace. This is 1992, summer of 1992. Disgrace, didn't make nearly, made like $1,000 for all this time I was in Antarctica, had a credit card debt. And so this was a losing experience in a financial way. It was a great storytelling experience. And ended up on the doorsteps of moms and dads at 26 years old. They let me drive the beater station wagon. So there goes dating anybody. A friend of mine suggested I get a job at this catering company, which is big whopping $6.25 an hour. And then we made like $80 if we worked an event as cash. And so that was my beer drinking money. I drank my dad's beer out of the fridge, and you know. And this is where I started kind of drinking a lot more during the day. So I get off of work, I pick up a little. I rationalize it, like it's only an 8-ounce beer, right? But I always had 4 or 5 of them on the way home. But before that, I'd wake up saying, you know, today's the day. I start exercising. I get my life together. My friends are going to law school. They're graduating. They're going to business school. They're graduating. They're getting jobs. And I'm living at mom's and dad's, driving the beater station wagon, and getting drunk at night. And got in a relationship. I came in here after a 4-day drinking binge. The relationship was obviously over. She was sleeping with my best friend. We learned that because we shared a sexual disease together, which was really pleasant. And I came home just broken. And I asked my dad, "Is like, can you contact, you know, find out where a meeting might be?" And then a thought came in that said, "Maybe you should make the call." So I called AA, and they told me about this meeting over here. 9:30 in the morning, I came in. I was convinced that everybody was just like me and that nobody knew each other, right? Well, I learned that I was the only stranger in the room that day. They all knew each other. They'd known each other, some of them, for years. I didn't realize that's how AA worked. And I was suggested to get a white chip. So I picked up a white chip. I was told that there was a meeting at 11 o'clock. And if I had to go to work, there was a meeting at 5:45. There was one at 8 o'clock. And I gradually discovered there's other clubhouses, and they have meetings at 10 and 11 o'clock. And so I just started going to that 9:30 meeting because I had nothing better to do. I had the opportunity that I didn't have to be at work till 11. And so I did that. I started my day with a meeting. And at 5:45, if I wasn't catering, I went to a meeting. And at 8 o'clock when I was bored, I didn't want to be at my parents' house, I went to a meeting. At 10 o'clock when I was really kind of stir crazy and wanted to be around some other crazies, I went to a meeting. And I just kind of hung out in Alcoholics Anonymous because it was a lot easier to be around a lot of people who weren't drinking, who may not be happy about it, but they weren't drinking, than to be in a bar or looking for some other things. And I gave up everything. You know, I stopped going to the Grateful Dead concerts, stopped the music scene for a while, and I hung out in AA, and after about a year, which is a little bit too long, I started working the steps because I had the idea that I wanted to go to culinary school. I was able to get into culinary school, and I thought, oh, yes, I've arrived. So everybody gets into culinary school. You know, they're looking for people. So I got into culinary school, and I went away to culinary school up in Hyde Park, New York. They had meetings on campus. They had some meetings around the small towns. I started attending those. I actually got a sponsor. And yet, my story has reservations in it. I always have these little reservations that come up. And one of them had been that, drinking is my problem. I didn't realize it was my solution. It was my problem. And marijuana is going to be okay. And that thought just grew, right? These little thoughts, these little seeds of walking out the door of Alcoholics Anonymous. We've got to pick those weeds out because they will continue. I've learned in my sobriety that they continue to pop up and I have to pluck them. And the best way to pluck them is to share them with a sponsor. But I didn't share these thoughts with the sponsor. I just thought, whatever. And then the time came and I smoked. And like I said, I lost my spiritual connection like that. And then I played the game. I would stop for a couple weeks and then I'd smoke a little bit. And then finally, as a 2 or 3 years of doing that, picking up some white chips, I returned to Atlanta, started coming back here. But 2 or 3 years of playing that game, I just said, fuck it, I'll just smoke weed. It's okay. I got a job, I got an apartment, I'm doing well at the job, blah, blah, blah. I'll just smoke weed and it'll be okay. And found a pretty woman. We got married. We had a child. Bought a condo. Had 2 cars. I was miserable smoking really good weed all day long. And it was, I wasn't smoking weed. I was thinking about smoking weed. And if I ran out, there was a problem. Is that it? Because I began to do this all by myself, right? I became what I thought an alcoholic was before I got here. Somebody who just drinks by himself, under a bridge, somewhere, all lonely. I became that as a marijuana smoker with a wife, child, job, 2 cars, and a house. It's just me. It's a very lonely existence. And I got thirsty. And I got fearful about that. So I came back to Alcoholics Anonymous, kind of playing the in and out game again. I met this kid. He had to be 10 years younger than I was. And for whatever reason, I listened to him a little bit. And I said, I'll meet you tomorrow. And so I met him the next day. And then I met him the next day. And then he introduced me to this band of kids. And some people may know where I'm going with this, but I started hanging out with this group, predominantly male, going to meetings. And that's what they do. They went to meetings. And I didn't really fit in, but it took some of that loneliness away. Right? And and their whole idea was to work with others. And I call them we were street sweepers of Alcoholics Anonymous. We were working with people who
AA wasn't
in some ways, or rooms didn't know how to, or they'd fallen out of the halfway houses or whatever it is.
And I ran with these guys for 2.5 years.
And stayed sober during that time.
and it worked. This is a long time
ago, so I know the group has changed. But we weren't really doing a lot of step work. And so I decided to join another group, another sponsor, started doing step work, became secretary of that group.
And see, the first aspect of my AA adventure in the 90s was I didn't get involved in Alcoholics Anonymous. I came to Alcoholics Anonymous. And there's a really big difference. A lot of people come to Alcoholics Anonymous, but the people who get long-term sobriety seem to be the ones who get involved and participate and clean up the coffee cups and straighten the chairs, who are discussion leaders, who sponsor people. The ones who just come, they might get some time. A lot of them don't. And then they go out. And then they come back in. And then they go out. And it's a vicious circle, and I've been in that circle because until I joined this group, how are you going to pick up your damn chair? That's your coffee cup. You put it away. Right? And that's not what participation, service, and humility is about. Right? And I had to learn those things because I didn't have any of it. And that's what that group taught me. And I didn't want to sponsor anybody. It just takes up my time. Right? So that group taught me a lot. And I had the opportunity several years later to start a group. And we started a group, and we quickly became a big group. We had a Thursday night big book study and a Saturday night speaker meeting. And that's been great. So I've participated in that group a lot. And I've been here a long time now. And I've also found that sometimes I'm not really participating. Sometimes I'm just coming to meetings. Sometimes my sponsor is just a name. It's not a phone call. It's not a conversation. And then I wonder why, you know, I don't like my job so much, and why my son and dog are bothering me, and why my wife's being a bitch, and why my mother is bothering me, and why am I so irritable, restless, and discontent? I haven't had a drink or a smoke in la years. Well, the fact is I'm not maintaining my spiritual condition. And that's what this whole thing's all about. It's maintaining a spiritual connection, to creating a relationship with a higher power. And some people are fortunate that they come in here and they may have that relationship. That's a relationship I decided at about 13 years old that I didn't want to have anything to do with. And because the private school I went to happened to be a Christian prep school, and it was very one-sided. And I didn't like it. I've gone through the steps multiple times. I have had to rekindle my relationship with the higher power because he's always there and I'm the one who turns off the switch. Right? I wouldn't think that he's turning off the switch. But it's really me turning off the switch. And the good news, and a friend of mine calls it, we get self-reliant again. So, you know, COVID was very interesting. A lot of my meetings were on Zoom. And I have this ability to not drink, not smoke, but get irritable, restless, and discontent. And get self-reliant. And so what's happened in the past 6 months, I've become very aware that my life is not going the way I want it to. And that I've been battling with the people in my life. My home group's not behaving right. You know, if your home group's not behaving right, you better take a look in the mirror. And I've had to take a look in the mirror. So I am back involved in the steps. I've 3/4 of the way through a 4-step and started the 5th step with my sponsor. And we'll have to go through, you know, 6 and 7. I'll have to make my lists. I'll have to make the amends. And I've asked God to help me. And I'll tell you, Lisa came and asked me to do this. I was asked to do something last week. I had, you know, 4 guys asked me to start sponsoring them. You know, 3 of them haven't showed up, but you know, that's just the way it is. And I was joking with a friend. He's like, I don't think God's done with you yet. Right? Because I have this idea. Like, my idea is it's a weed. Right? It needs to be plucked. That I can manage well if I just come to AA. And that's not a truth. It's not true. My life
proves it. And I've also learned that it's easier to stay here than it is to come back in here. All right? I may not like being here. That's not a requirement. The requirement's a desire to stop drinking, not a desire to love this stuff. But I've learned that I can love this stuff. And I can learn to love the people in Alcoholics Anonymous. The craziest part about this is when you start sponsoring people and start listening to Fifth Steps, you realize that we are all so similar in the way we think. And we're all so similar in the things that we have done. Right? And I'm not talking about maybe some of the there's outrageous on either side, but most of us have done a lot of the same stuff. And it's all okay, really. So we talk about this psychic change that we need to have, and the steps produce the psychic change. The book helps us understand the steps. The groups help us make relationships that we want to keep. Now, I've known some of the people in this room for 25 years. And that's crazy, y'all, because I came from a life that was every 4 years or 3 years or 2 years, people would come in and they go out, right? High school and college and then a couple of years in the new city and then back to Atlanta and then back somewhere else. Now, I was always dropping relationships and friendships, and yet I could come in this room on any given day and see somebody who was back in the 90s by then. One of the things that I first thought when I got in here was I was going to get everything I wanted. And for a guy who wasn't sure what he wanted, I've gotten a lot of things. So my first wife and I decided after several years, and our child was three, to get a divorce. She got a divorce from me because she kept catching me with weed, right? That's the problem. When you're supposed to be sober, but you keep getting caught with the weed, that becomes a problem. And so she asked for a divorce, and I went through a divorce with a sponsor in Alcoholics Anonymous. Because those are tricky things. And revenge and rage is not a good thing to have when you're, A, you're trying to stay sober, but B, when you're going through a divorce. What came out of that is my child developed a love for soccer, and I became his soccer coach. And for 13 years, I was able to participate in his soccer adventures in such a way that I had almost more time with my son than many full-time parents do. Because I just spent, it's one-on-one, driving, coaching. And that was an experience that I hadn't really thought I'd get when I got sober. He's now 20 years old. He's not one of us. He's doing extremely well in college, which was not my story. He knows some of my story. And he's been careful. But now he's in college, he's in a fraternity. I know they drink, I know he's gotten drunk and that kind of stuff. But I'm not overly concerned about it because he's doing well in college. That doesn't mean it can't develop, but at the moment it hasn't. I was an alcoholic right out the gate. Right out the gate. I had a drink of wine, I wanted another drink of wine, I wanted my grandmother's wine, that's just me out the gate. It's not his story. I took 3 years off from women. It really wasn't my plan. It's God's plan. And then started trying to do some dating, and then ended up being in a friendship with a woman in AA. We did a 6-year courtship, if you will. We got married. We brought our kids together. And now I have a family of four. My son has brothers and sisters. I was really concerned about him being a single person. He's a little quiet. So now he's and they act like brothers and sisters. It's a beautiful thing. Those are not things that I could create on my own.
being married to one of us has its challenges, but it has certainly been a great way for me to continue the practice of Alcoholics Anonymous, and to have somebody who understands some things. And now, by going through the steps again, I look to reach another level, right? This is all about personal growth. It's all about getting better. I've had sponsors say, how much better do you want to get? So, you know, when you do your fourth step, how much better do you want to get? Put it all down. When you do your fifth step, tell it all. Because what you don't tell will come around and boomerang on you and kick you in the ass. When you do your amends, do them all. Don't hold back. Because what I found is the world continues to open up if I allow it to continue to open up and if I participate in Alcoholics Anonymous. I'm the one who closes the door, and God's the one who's on the other side saying, open it up! We got more for you! Right? And so, I'm going to close off a little bit early. I appreciate you guys being here. I can't believe I got over the fear of being in front of this many people. And God bless you.
Thank you, Eric. That was truly a pleasure to listen to you, sir.
I'm Tia, and I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, Tia.
The blue chips keep me in, and you have a chip system. I just help you keep up with you a lot of time you have clean. First, you offer the white chip. If you heard something you like, I'm going to walk with this one day at a time. You come get a white chip. We'll come back to it. Next, we have a silver chip for 30 days. We have a gold chip for 60 days.
All right.
We have a red chip for 90 days. We have a yellow chip for 6 months. We have a green chip for 9 months.
Keep working.
Keep coming back. We got a blue chip for 1 year or multiple years.
My name's Greg. I'm an alcoholic.
Hey, Greg.
4 years ago, right around this time, I was in a room just like y'all. You know, it was like a 160 pounds. I was coming down from something that kept me up for like 5 days in a row. Tried to finish it with vodka. Living in a Salvation Army. Found this program, or this program found me, and then found a relationship with a higher power. And through that relationship with a higher power, got connected with a group in here, met some people, you know. It got real, and you know, it's good stuff. Those promises, they're real. It's real stuff. So thanks for letting me share. It has been a minute.
time and time again. One more broken promise left you twisting in the wind.